NPR. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farming Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Stephanie Phillips visits Cornell Cooperative Extension and speaks with Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke from the Calico Geese Quilters Guild. In this segment, Now You Know, you'll hear about the guild members and their activities. From our 2016 Farming Country archives, we offer you the late Bernie Klein's conversation with animal rehabilitator Lisa Wiegand. Bernie and Lisa discuss finding a distressed fawn. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk coming up on today's Farming Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. The Los Angeles Fire Department issued new evacuation orders and warnings for the Palisades fire last night, affecting the area around Brentwood. That fresh evacuation comes as California Governor Gavin Newsom is ordering an independent investigation into why firefighters battling the fires face challenges getting water to fight the flames. Marisa Lagos, member station KQED, reports.
Crews in the Pacific Palisades and near Pasadena have repeatedly been stymied by low water pressure and fire hydrants running dry. In a letter to local officials, Newsom wrote that while water supplies from hydrants are not designed for widespread blazes, losing supplies likely impaired firefighting and evacuation efforts. He directed state water and fire officials to investigate. Newsom asked LA officials to conduct their own review and share information with the state.
Health officials, meanwhile, warning some people in L.A. that their water is not safe. The advisories for those living near the largest burn zones. And Pierce Pinghuang reports that urban wildfires offer specific risks for drinking water.
Residents near the wildfires, including those in Pasadena and the Pacific Palisades, should not drink the tap water. They should not make food or ice with it. They should even consider not showering or washing dishes with it. These warnings were issued over concerns of chemical contamination from the wildfires. Jackson Webster is a civil engineer at Chico State in California.
Not everybody in all of Southern California needs to be concerned about their water right now, but there are certainly systems that have been damaged that probably will have lasting contamination issues.
Webster says the low water pressure has created a vacuum that pulls ash and soot back into the water system. You may not be able to see or smell it. Officials will need to test the water to see what's in it. Ping Huang, NPR News.
Crews in Georgia working to restore power to tens of thousands of customers following that winter storm that's been moving through the south. Forecasters expect that storm to move off the east coast today. At least 10 news organizations have retracted or amended stories after an NPR investigation showed that a man they featured as a brave Chinese dissident was linked to an elaborate con. NPR's Frank Langford reports that journalism scholars can't recall such a mass action based on concerns about a single news source.
Dozens of news organizations around the world covered Wang Jingyu as he presented himself, a courageous dissident standing up to China's Communist Party. But an NPR investigation linked Wang to a Byzantine con that involved forged government documents and bankrupted the victims. Wang denies any wrongdoing. The news organizations that changed or retracted coverage of Wang include the Associated Press, Al Jazeera, Germany's Deutsche Welle, as well as Radio Free Asia, which is funded by the U.S. government. Ed Wasserman, former dean of the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of California, Berkeley, said, quote, "I've never seen anything like this." Frank Langfitt, NPR News.
Say, if you're tired of the cold outside, join us inside for the annual Retro Cocktail Hour All Exotica show, where we'll sweep you away to a tropical climate with tunes by the new Les Baxter Orchestra, the Waikiki Seven, the Islanders, and more. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Stephanie Phillips visits Cornell Cooperative Extension and speaks with Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke from the Calico Geese Quilters Guild. In this segment, Now You Know, you'll hear about the guild members and their activities. From our 2016 Farming Country archives, we offer the late Bernie Klein's conversation with animal rehabilitator Lisa Wigand. Bernie and Lisa discuss finding a distressed fawn. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with his Star Talk report that highlights this week's rare event involving Mars and the Moon occultation. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country.
Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. A rather unique occurrence will take place in the evening hours of Monday. The full moon will pass in front of Mars, causing the red planet to disappear for a short period of time. This occurrence is called a lunar occultation. This will be the only lunar occultation visible to our viewing area this year. Typically, the moon will pass in front of bright stars and planets several times each year. The moon's exact position in the sky can vary by as much as 2 degrees, or 4 times the diameter of the full moon, from one location to another. This means that the visibility of a lunar occultation depends on the observer's specific location. This year, the moon will pass in front of a bright star or a planet 42 times, but the occultation of Mars on Monday will be the only one visible to our viewing area. Since the moon will be full, it will be very bright, and its glare may make spotting Mars difficult. A pair of binoculars or a telescope may be helpful to spot Mars through the moon's glare. Begin looking for Mars a little after 9 p.m. It will be off the lower left side of the moon at about the 7 o'clock position. Mars will disappear behind the moon at 9:20 p.m. in the eastern sky. Mars will remain hidden from view by the moon for almost an hour and 20 minutes. It will reappear off the moon's upper right side at about the 1 o'clock position at 10:38 p.m. Don't miss your chance to see the rare event of the lunar occultation of Mars on Monday evening. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
This is Stephanie Phillips with Now You Know for Farm and Country. This morning, I'm at the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Liberty. I'm speaking with Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke, past president and current president of Calico Geese Quilters. The extension is where the Calico Geese Quilters meet. Debbie will explain.
We meet here at the Cooperative Extension on Ferndale Loomis Road, and we meet on the second Tuesday of the month for our business meeting, and then we have Thursday mornings, we have our social sew.
A group that's more of a practical get-together and actually sew. And then we meet monthly separately. One Saturday a month we get together and we either have a project that everybody is working on together, or sometimes we have what we call a free sew, where people just bring their machines, they come, and we sew.
And it's all here at the Cooperative Extension.
So yeah, we meet twice monthly, and there's a group that meets every week.
And how long do those meetings last? How much can you get done?
The business meeting is usually an hour to an hour and a half. Depends if we stop and have break and stuff like that. If not, it's about an hour. Free sews are usually from 9 to 3. The workshop and the free sew is 9 to 3.
The Saturday yeah. workshops sometimes start at 9, sometimes 10.
Yeah.
They go to as late as 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
The Thursday social that Debbie mentioned, we start at 10 and we go to noon or 1.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can get quite a bit done.
We have a new member who showed up, a month ago, and she wanted to make a baby quilt for her grandbaby. And so she has been...
Every Thursday she's here, yes.
Well, she went and bought some fabric, and we've helped her design and cut and now piece a quilt. And just today, she finished the quilt top, Now we need to sandwich it and make a backing, and that will make it a quilt.
Kathy, do you have to concentrate on the pattern while you're working, or can you chat while you're working?
It depends on what your pattern is. If it's a simple pattern, you probably could chat and work. But if it's an intricate one with many pieces and stuff, you don't chat.
And, you know, that really depends on the person, too.
True.
I can't stand to do the same block over and over and over and over again. If I'm going to do a bunch of the same blocks, I would prefer to be at the guild and have conversation going
right.
on at the same time to entertain me. But as Debbie says, if I'm doing something complicated...
You need to concentrate.
Quilting is a lot of math. Quilting is math and geometry.
Yep.
And so if you're doing something new, sometimes you just need to concentrate.
Yeah.
Who does the designs?
You can get patterns commercially. You can go to the store and buy patterns. There's lots of patterns online. Or I think the more experienced you get as a quilter, the more you see something and you think, oh, I kind of like that, but I think I want to do a little of that. I don't really like that part. I'm going to change this or I'm going to add some applique. Can I tell you about a quilt that we are in the process of doing right now? It's called a round robin quilt. One of our guild members, maybe a 14-inch block. It used a number of fabrics, a fairly traditional block.
Now, wait a minute. You're using block. What does that mean?
Block
exactly?
is a part of a quilt. So she made a design out of fabric about 14 inches square. We would call that a block. Then she handed it off to another member with some of the scrap fabric from what she had used. And the next member looked at it, thought about it for a little while, and said, okay, now I know what I'm going to do, and added to that. Worked on it for a few weeks, handed it off to another member. The other member takes it and says, let me think about this. Now the quilt is just about finished at 108 by 92, and it will become one of our annual raffle quilts.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't have to be a preset pattern. It can be a very creative process.
Quilting is a creative process.
Absolutely.
Quilting is a creative process. It's all in what you feel comes from your heart is what quilting is to me.
Kathy, where do you get the fabric?
Ha ha, she asked that question. Well, you can go to the store. You can go down to Middletown. We used to have a few quilt shops around here. We don't anymore. There are a few craft shops. You can obviously go online. One of the more interesting ways we get fabrics is somebody will be moving. They might have an elderly member of the family who is giving up housekeeping, and they have a bunch of fabric from their whole lives as seamstresses, and they don't know what to do with it, and they'll come bring it to the extension and
they donate it.
Wind up with boxes
donations.
Of fabric. And that's really one of my favorite ways to get fabric. It's like Christmas, but it's also, you're looking back over time, and you're seeing fabrics from different periods of time in history, different colors. And you imagine what they bought this fabric for. Yeah. Their baby fabrics. Were they buying it for a grandbaby? So it's a fun way to get fabrics, and I really enjoy that. I enjoy getting things that belong to somebody else and wondering.
Well, and we recycle too.
Yeah.
We're recycling and using
absolutely.
That because a lot of that stuff that we get, everybody takes and they make
things.
Different things
we make
with
things.
It. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very seldom do we throw things
what
away.
What I'm wearing today is a piece of fabric that came to me. Somebody brought this fabric in, and it was just a piece of upholstery fabric.
It looks like upholstery fabric,
and
yes.
I just made myself a little jumper with it. And
very nice.
I love that. So, but I do like getting fabrics and wondering whose hands it passed through before it came to us.
So it's not always cotton.
No, not always. Not always. Not always.
Silks is another. Back in the old days, people would use whatever fabric they had. They might have dressmaking fabric. They might have had fabric that came with curtains or whatever.
Yeah.
And these days, modern days, we now have t-shirt quilts.
I mean, I've even used, for a backing on one of my quilts, I used a sheet.
Mm-hmm.
I needed something, and it was the right color, and I said, I'm going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out fine.
Is the backing quilted also?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, because you layer it together. You have your backing, your batting, and then your quilt top. And then you pin it all together, and then you quilt it, you sew it. So it's all stabilized and sewn together.
If you think back to the old days when they had an old blanket that was the fill, so you had an old wool blanket, and then you made a beautiful top and put something on the back. If you just made a case like a duvet cover and slid that in there, the blanket is always going to slide around. It's always going to...
Well, a lot of times they tied them.
Yeah.
They would take thread and pull it through and then tie it into a knot. And every
like,
so
it's
many...
It's like tufts. Like
yeah.
A,
yes. Yeah.
Like and
a
sofa. The whole point is to keep that...
From moving.
It's internal blanket from sliding around. It's keeping it in place.
Yeah, so you can use all kinds of things. Old clothes, old curtains.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, the things we do. People will come to us and ask us. Sometimes people will come to us and say, a member of the family has died, and I would like to make something to remember them by. Sometimes
shirts,
ties,
yes.
All kinds of things.
Yeah.
Dresses, I want some of that incorporated. I made a quilt for a neighbor who had her grandma's apron and her mother's apron, and she just wanted those some pieces of those fabrics integrated into the quilt somewhere.
Nice. Are there some kinds of fabrics that don't work out well?
I personally don't like artificial fabrics. A quilt.
I wouldn't use polyester at all.
A quilt is something, you know, I envision a quilt being up near your face. And
soft and snuggly.
Soft and snuggly. I don't want polyester on my face.
No.
Aside from the fabric, what other materials do you need?
Thread.
Scissors,
cutters,
rotary cutter,
cutters,
rulers.
A rotary cutter.
Uh huh. It's a
razor.
It's like a razor, but it's a round disc, and it's on a handle, and you put that next to your ruler, and you cut with that, and it makes a sharp, very sharp, precise cut.
Kathy, do you have some foundation?
No, when you're making the quilt, you're starting really from scratch, and you're cutting a piece of fabric and attaching it to another piece of fabric. And so as you're building out...
You're attaching sideways.
Yeah. Some of these, you know, Debbie alluded with the discussion of the razor cutting. It's very precise cutting. Well, it can be. It can be very imprecise if that's the type of quilt you want to do. But you're literally starting with just a piece of fabric and attaching another piece of fabric. And how far out are you going? Yeah.
People could never understand why you would buy big pieces of fabric, cut it all up into little pieces of fabric, and then sew it all back together and make a big piece. Really? That's quilting.
Huh. Is there a certain kind of stitching that's used to put the pieces together?
You're just using a straight stitch to put the pieces together. So with quilting, there's the piecing part, which is making the top.
Mm-hmm.
There is something we call applique, where you might cut out a shape that you want to put on the top of your quilt, and so you would attach that with an applique stitch, a turn needle stitch.
You might do that by hand.
Absolutely by hand. Actually, a goodly number of our guild are people who do some degree of hand quilting. Most of our quilters do machine piecing. So when I'm attaching one piece to the other, I put it in the machine because that's a nice sturdy stitch. But when I go to do the quilting, which is anchoring those three layers together, a lot of us will do hand quilting with that. So a combination of machine and hand.
I do more machine.
Do you?
My embroidery machine, I do. A lot of my quilts are done that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I use a fancy stitches and stitch it together.
Nice. Kathy, how long does it take to make a quilt?
It really depends. I think it was 2 years ago at Christmas time, I started a Dear Jane quilt.
What does that mean?
It's just, there was a woman back in Civil War times who made a quilt, and it became quite famous. Her quilt was made of 13 by 13, I used to know how many that equals. Somebody do the math for me. 4.5-inch blocks. And every single block was different, and every single block used a different technique. Some of it was applique, some of it was piecing, some of it was machine applique. Oh, the techniques, the things I learned. It took me about 9 months to do the top. Then I sandwiched it and did and hand quilted the whole thing. So that took me the better part of a year to do that.
Whoa.
On the other hand, if you pick a fairly simple pattern, I finished something recently. I showed a quilt the other night, Debbie, and I just was frustrated with a lot of things I had been doing, and I found this little package of beautiful fabrics, and I didn't
do... That was nice.
I didn't do anything fancy. I just sewed squares to squares to squares and then put borders around it. And I think I did that quilt in 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you put borders around the individual squares or around the whole thing?
No, I put the squares together, then I put 3 separate borders around the big block.
Nice.
Debbie, how about you?
It depends. It depends on the size.
And
what you have going on in your life. If you're able to sit every single day, it wouldn't take a long time to make a quilt, but... In my life, I'm running 6 different directions, so it does take time to...
If you have a snow day, it's a good thing.
Yes, yes. Or a mental health day.
Well, what do you do with all these quilts when you finish them? There's a limited use for quilts.
Well, it depends. Sometimes you may give it as a gift. You make it for a specific occasion.
You have a family wedding. Usually if there's a family wedding, I'll make a quilt. If somebody I really like them, I'll make them a quilt. Babies, of course.
We love to
make baby quilts. If there's an illness, actually one of the quilts that I garished when my father died, one of our guild members, Sally, gave me a quilt that she had made years ago. And I keep that quilt on Dad's bed, and I just cherish that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the term she likes to use is comfort quilts.
Yeah.
She gives quilts for comfort.
Yeah, so. And that's really what they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to comfort you and keep you warm and snuggle with.
Mm-hmm. So now you know about the Calico Geese Quilters, a group that gathers at Cornell Cooperative Extension to chat and make quilts, or maybe make quilts and chat. My guests have been Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke, past president and current president of the organization. If you'd like to suggest topics for future Now You Know segments, email me at stephanie@wjffradio.org. This has been Stephanie Phillips for Farm and Country.
From the WJFF Radio Catskill 2016 Farm and Country Archives, here is the late volunteer Bernie Klein speaking with Lisa Wigand, animal rehabilitator.
Good day to you all. This is Bernie Klein for Farm and Country, and I'm here this morning with Lisa Wigand. And Lisa is up here in Livingston Manor, and Lisa is a licensed animal rehabilitator. Is that right, Lisa?
Yes, it is.
And I'd like you to talk to us a little bit about fawns. I notice here in early spring, sometimes I'll see a fawn by the side of the road or sitting alone in the bushes, and I never know what to do. Can you help me out with that?
I get a lot of calls in the springtime. A lot of other rehabilitators do as well. A lot of people make the mistake right away. They want to go and pick up or handle the fawn or move it to a different area. The first thing you want to do is stand back and observe and see what is the behavior of the animal. Is it distressed? Is it hiding? Does it look like it's weak and in desperate need? A lot of times the mothers will hide the fawns, and sometimes not in the best place. We don't think that's the safest place, or it seems like an open area, or it's near your house. The reason why they do that is because there's less predators in a more populated area. So sometimes they're inexperienced mothers. They'll put them in a really odd place. But if you see the fawn in looking in any kind of distress or crying or running around looking lost, definitely you want to first call somebody, if it's in the road or something like that, it's okay to pick it up and move it to the side of the road. But contact somebody first to see what they suggest you should do.
So when you say contact somebody, who would I call?
The first place you can try to call is the DEC office. For this region, it's the New Pulse office. And they have a list of wildlife rehabilitators who you can contact for either advice or for them to take the animal from you if you're in need.
Okay, what if the animal does not seem to be in distress but is just sitting there? Do I do anything or what do I do?
The best thing to do is, if you can, wait in the area for an hour or so at a good distance of at least 100 yards away and observe. Make sure that the mother comes back. The mother is not going to come back as often as you suspect. They may come back once or twice during the day, but typically they're most active at times of greatest change, which is dawn and dusk. So the mothers put them there so they can go and forage because the babies are too small to follow behind them. And the less distraction around that area, the better off the fawn is. So you may see a mother running around blatting or acting really excited and upset. If you see that, you might be too close to a fawn and you don't even know it's there.
Thank you, Lisa.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and website DEC.gov has more information on wildlife health rehabilitators.
And this has been Bernie Klein for Farm and Country.
A bow of gratitude goes to the late Bernie Klein, who was a WJFF volunteer and segment producer for Farm and Country. Radio Catskill learned of Bernie's recent passing from this life, and as a producer, I am honored to shine his light of compassion with this archived segment from 2016. This is the music that Bernie used in his WJFF Radio Catskill production.
I never got to see New Orleans or hear a mournful sound, hear that singing through the doorways, the tapping on the ground, the dancing feet on Bourbon Street, the jazz, the blues, the beat. I never got to see New Orleans or feel the Delta heat.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers, the late Bernie Klein, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke, from the Calico Geese Quilters Guild. And from our archived conversation on distressed fawns, Lisa Wigand, animal rehabilitator in Livingston Manor. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen on air and on your smartphone. Stream us live on our webpage, wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.
Ride the river to the sea. Hear the muse of Louisiana. Sing her heart to me. That's in Louis and Dixieland. She is the river, she is the land. But I never got to see New Orleans or hold her in my hand.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union.